Hey there, thanks for listening to the Church on the Ridge podcast. This is David Wall. Let's be honest. We all have those triggers, those fuses that get set off. And some people really know how to light them. In fact, you might be related to them or at least see them around this time of year. So with that in mind, how can we prepare ourselves so that we don't blow up when that fuse gets lit? In week three of our series, Healthy Holidays, Charlie tells us how to diffuse the fuse. Take a listen. Yeah, well, welcome to week three of Healthy Holidays. Great seeing you guys. Thank you for coming out. Our new church is coming along. Guys, thank you for being a part of that experience. And it's going to be really cool. It's going to be fun. We'll get out of the close. And you know what's been amazing is you guys are still haven't figured out your seats yet. Somebody's gotten your seat like every week and you have to keep moving around. And so I don't even know if you're here this morning because you usually sit in the same spots and now I get it all messed up, but it's great. Great to have you. I love watching the spy movies where the guy goes in and he's got to save the world. The bomb is ready to go off and you watch the red ticker's ticking down. He's got like 90 seconds before he's got to defuse the bomb and it's ticking down, tick, click, click. And he reaches into this thing. He pulls out his MacGyver knife. I got one from Hannah. She got this for me in Albania. She's back. Hannah, where are you? Wave, Hannah. So this is my new MacGyver knife. He pulls out and he starts unscrewing the panels on the bomb. And then he reaches inside and he pulls out his whole thing of rainbow wires, right? And he gets down to which two colors? Red and blue. Red and blue. And he's got to make a decision. And you know, he's down to like 5 seconds and he's got to make a decision. He's got to cut one or he's going to, the fate of humanity and anthrax is going to go everywhere. And he finally cuts the red wire. The blue wire. I don't know which one he cuts, but he saves the world, right? So this morning we're going to talk about diffuse the fuse before it blows. Diffuse the fuse before it blows. You've all had that experience where your wife or your husband or your kids or your in-laws have come up to you and they've got like the match in their hand and they're just right there in your face and that fuse lights. And you can see them lighting it. You can, oh no, here they come. They have that look on their face and they're going to say something and sure enough, it comes out of their mouth and that comes out and poof, and the fuse is... And I wish I could do the Mission Impossible theme song. Can you hear it in your head? Right? And it's going down, right? And the fuse is going down and this thing is going to blow and you've got, and you can you see it in your mind? As you reach into your head and you can feel all the, you know, the thing is getting closer and closer and closer and you reach in there and you got these wires and you got an option right here to cut one of the two wires. And you can save humanity. You can save your family. You can save your marriage. You can save a terrible evening with your kids. You can save the holidays, depending on which wire you cut. Today, I'm thankful that God's word shows us how to diffuse the fuse. Because so many times I've cut the wrong wire, and it ends up being a night of anthrax. Everyone's killing each other. People are falling over around you, and you hope that you're the last man standing. And unfortunately, you're not. Sandy is so good at lighting my fuse. She's really good. You know what lights my fuse? When she disrespects me. When she says something that I'm like, hey, what, do you don't think I'm smart enough? Wait, are you saying I'm not good enough? Are you saying I'm less than? And man, I can feel that thing and it's just lit. And I've got this moment. You know, I'm really good at lighting Sandy's fuse. You know what lights her fuse? When I ignore her and don't appreciate her. When she's put together this wonderful meal for Thanksgiving, and it was fantastic. One of our best Thanksgivings ever. It was just wonderful. And I'm in playing video games and watching football, and she's there, and I just scarf that thing down, and I eat it, and I just kind of walk away, and she's like... And something inside of her is going, hey, am I less than... Do you not see all that I've done? And she has this, she has a few moments before, is she going to go one way? Is she going to cut the red or the blue? And she has to make a decision. I want you to take notes today. Because we're going to learn how to defuse that fuse. Because all of you have one. And all of you have somebody in your life who can light it like that. The Bible tells us in 1 Peter, he says, finally. Remember, we get down to these things where he's saying, take note of this. Finally, guys, I'm finishing up my letter here, so take note of this. Guys, all of you, this is not for your spouse today. This is for all of you, all right? It's not for your friend you brought. This is for all of you. So I would hope that you get yourself in the mindset that today I'm going to be in an attitude of humility. And that's tough for us because none of us likes to be humble. We want to be first. But if you'll allow yourself, I want to be in an attitude of humility. I want to receive today. I think God, through the power of His Holy Spirit, would want to talk to you. You know, God talks a lot, but it's unfortunate because much of the time our pride says this is for somebody else. So if you just take up, say, okay, I will take notes. I will receive. Finally, all of you, look what it says. Live in harmony with one another. How cool would it be if your holidays, the rest of your holidays, were lived in harmony? You know, we still have Christmas coming. We still have office parties coming. We still have get-togethers coming. And you know, oh, I got to go to that. Or you could live in harmony. Wouldn't that be amazing? He says, live in harmony. And then he starts to list the wires. And he lists six of them. He says, be sympathetic. That's one of them. Love as brothers, that's another one. Be compassionate, that's another one. Humble, talked about that, that's another one. And he goes on, do not repay evil with evil or insult with insult. What is he talking about? That is definitely not the right way to handle it because if somebody insults you, you know what, Jeff? I'm going to insult you right back. In fact, I'm going to insult you worse than you insulted me. No, he says with a blessing. Which way are you going to cut? Which way are you going to go? Because to this you were called so that you may inherit a blessing. You realize that God has a blessing for your home this holiday? You know, you cannot picture God as Santa Claus. That would be just anathema. But I believe he's got this storeroom of blessings. He's got your name on it. He says, man, I want to pour out blessing on your home, but I got to withhold this one. You're just lighting off too many fuses. There's bombs going off all over the place. I can't bless that mess. So that you can inherit a blessing for whoever would love life and see good days. Anybody here? Going to love life? Get up in the morning and go, man, I love my wife. I love my kids. I love life. Now I get to go through another day. Must keep his tongue from evil and his lips from deceitful speech. So we're going to look at that this morning. The first one. Oh, did you notice he gave six wires this morning? We're only going to talk about three of them. I turned in my notes on Monday or Tuesday this week. I forget which one. And Betty, she does our notes. She does such a great job. And she's going, Pastor, I'm having a little hard trouble getting all six of your points into the 2.5 pages that we get here. She turns to me, she says, What if you spoke only three this week and three next week? Dude, that was like lighting a fuse. That was so disrespectful. She didn't believe that I could preach entire six in the time that if David would give me just a little more time. But I had a moment there. I had a moment there. Look at this person. Who does this secretary think she is telling me that I can't preach 6 points? And do I cut the red of the blue, red of the blue, red of the blue? Oh, man, I stepped back and said, oh, that was the Lord speaking. Thank you. Thank you. So you got to be here next week to get the other three, all right? So we're going to go through the first three. The first one is be sympathetic, sympathy. Be sympathetic. Your fuse is lit, and you got a choice. Am I going to be sympathetic, or am I going to repay some insults here? Someone cuts you down. They ignore you. You feel that timer going off. Click, 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 click. You watch the fuse burn. Shh. And you know you have minutes and sometimes only seconds to make a decision. But you can diffuse the fuse. You're going to seek peace and live in harmony. And you picture in your head those two wires and one of them says sympathy on them. And you look in your mind, you say, that's the one I'm going to cut. To be sympathetic. This person coming at you, lighting your fuse. To be sympathetic, what does it mean? It literally means to understand or affirm another person's feelings. to understand or from... Oh, Betty's here this morning. God bless you, Betty. I didn't see you back there. Hi. Thank you for lighting my fuse. Did that come out like it sounded? Okay. You're sensitive to what they are feeling. What are they feeling? What are they feeling? When they say this, there's something going on in their heart and their mind and their psyche as well. Something's happening inside of them. And so when they light your fuse, something's going on inside of them. Instead of just immediately recognizing, hey, this is putting me down. This is less than... I'm going to be sympathetic. See, when you're sympathetic, the other person has got two basic needs that you're going to meet. Every one of you have these basic needs. You're sitting in this room, you're breathing, you have these basic needs. The person that you're talking to has these basic needs. That person that ticks you off has these basic needs. And the Bible would call us to begin to meet those needs, and sympathy meets two of them. The first one is the need to be understood. The need to be understood. Isn't that true for you? You ever said, why can't you just understand what I'm trying to tell you? Why can't you just understand where I'm coming from? Could you just stop a minute and try to understand what's going on in my heart? And you can cut that fuse right there if you just stop and say, hey, I'm going to understand you. Can you help me understand what's happening with you? We all have a deep need to be understood. Your spouse is longing for you to understand them. Guys, you want to inherit a blessing? Look at your wife and say, man, I want to understand where you're coming from. She'll flop over right there. What? He's never said that before in his life. He wants to understand where I'm coming from. Wow. And she will, like, for the first time, take a breath. Oh, that was life to her. That was life. And ladies, you want to make your man just go to the moon. Help me understand where you're coming from. The second, everyone has this need to have our feelings validated. The need to have our feelings validated. So often in my marriage, I have invalidated Sandy's feelings. I did it a lot early on. I would look at her and say, you shouldn't feel that way. Why are you feeling that way? Nobody else feels that way. Well, you're the only one. Well, you're the weird person. Hey, normal people don't feel like this when this happens. So there must be something wrong with you, is in essence what I was saying to her. Here's one. Just get over it. What do you think? That was the red or the blue wire. Just get over it. All she needed for me to diffuse was look at her and say, man, I acknowledge that's really got to hurt. Man, I recognize it. What's going on in your heart right now? The secret to being sympathetic, to helping meet these two needs, are you ready for this? The secret is learning to listen. Learning to listen. So simple. You ever said this? The fuse has been lit and you've got an option here and you look at the other person and say, you're just not listening to me. No. And then they turn and look at you and say, no, you're not listening to me. Sandy and I have done this so many times. No, you're not listening to me. And you know what I do? I get louder because she's not listening. And obviously it's a problem with her hearing. And so if I get louder, she is going to listen to me because I have this deep need to be understood and my feelings to be acknowledged and be validated. And she is not doing it, so I need to speak louder because she just needs to. And here we are cutting the wrong wires. And we get louder. And instead of sympathy, we're blowing up the home. And the holidays go to H-E double hockey sticks. I go, what in the world? All because each one of us have these deep-seated needs to be heard, to be validated, to listen. And the Bible is so practical in the book of James. It says, hey, brothers and sisters, take note of this. Take note. He says, write this down. right? And they were writing on chisel and stone back then, so you can imagine how hard this was for them. You guys get pen and ink and free pens in the seat in front of you. It's all so easy. You know, take note of this. If you go to Israel with us, we're going to show you where they didn't chisel it out. They used vellum and stuff. But everyone should be quick to listen, quick to listen, quick to listen, quick to listen, quick to listen. What? Everyone should be quick to listen. The fuse is going, the fuse is going, the fuse is going, and you will set that thing off if you just open your mouth. If you open your mouth, you cut the wrong wire. Because look what happens, slow to speak, slow to become angry. And we are so good at reversing that. We are quick to get angry, and quick to speak. The fuse is going, the best thing you can do is shut your mouth. Because what comes out next is going to cut the red wire. Slow to speak. You ever thought about why it's so hard to keep your mouth shut? You ever thought about that? Why is it so hard to keep my mouth shut when Sandy's disrespecting me? When my kids aren't paying attention? When my employee is not... Why is it so hard to keep my mouth shut? If they keep talking and I keep my mouth shut, I may hear something that actually proves that I'm the problem. Did you hear that? If I keep my mouth shut and they keep talking, they may actually say something that actually opens up the curtain and shows that it's really my problem. And so I will keep talking because I don't want them, and I don't want the finger at, I want to turn this thing around. So I'll keep talking, and I'll keep talking louder, and I'll keep, because my pride will not allow me to say those three famous words, I was, it's my fault. Maybe that's a contraction, four words, it is my fault. I was wrong. I am sorry. So I've got to keep talking. And if I can get the thing to blow up, and if I can get the other person to blow, if I can light enough of their fuses, then I can step back and say, see, they're the ones who are wrong. They're the ones who are messed up. And I never have to look at my own problems. Sympathy, the Bible says, turns that around. We get involved in their world. We listen to how we came across to them, how we marginalized them, and we cut the blue wire. And all of a sudden, that which could have been ugly, and yes, it means I have to admit my own mistakes. But that's where sympathy comes in. Two areas of sympathy that are especially important. Romans 15 shows us. We must bear the burden of being considered others of the other's doubts and fears. Doubts and fears. What do you fear? Does this person really love me? Does this person really care about me? And we begin to doubt that in our relationships. And when those doubts creep in, then the next thing right behind them are the fears. Are they going to be here? Are they just tolerating? Is this thing going to last? And those doubts and fears kick in, and we have to be sympathetic to that and say, whoa, this person may be doubting and having fears that I really love them. And what's going to show them love except when I back down? And say, hey, let me help me understand you. Hey, can I be quiet for a minute and hear what you're trying to say? Could you say that again? And man, their voice is elevated. And boy, you can feel those fuses being lit all over because it just makes you all tense. But you're going to do what God's word says. You're going to keep your mouth shut. And you're going to be quick to listen, slow to speak, and slow to become angry. And all of a sudden, that which could have been anthrax that killed the family turns into an opportunity for grace. and learning. And you begin pouring into the other person, and those fears and doubts dissipate. And they lean into you. Cut the blue wire. Let me ask you a question. How would you rate yourself on sympathy? Are you quick to speak? You feel that fuse? You're not looking for where they're coming from. You want to know, hey, you got to help them see where you were coming from because you didn't really mean to say it like that or do that. So they should really appreciate what you felt when you said it, not what you actually said. Give yourself a zero. Marcus, you don't have to telegraph it for everybody, brother. He's up here, he's muttering. Any of you mutter? Any of you mutters? Marcus is a mutter. Sandy's a mutter. She raised her hand and said, yeah, let me give her a zero. Now, that was for you, not for Kim, right? Oh, yeah, okay. Kim gets a zero. She's a 10. All right, number two, loyalty. He says, finally, all of you, live in harmony with one another. Be sympathetic. Love as brothers. Love as brothers. Isn't that an interesting statement? Love as brothers. Because love is a great word. We use it all the time. But unfortunately, we have to clarify that word because we really don't understand what it means. And this is a word in Greek that we don't know, and I'm not going to go into it because you guys don't care about Greek. But he uses the word love as brothers. He uses the word phileo. It's called Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. And so I went into it. I'm sorry I did it. But love as brothers. Love as brothers. Phileo. Philadelphia, brotherly love. Why does he use that word? There's something about love between blood, right, brother? My brother and I, we're only 16 months apart, so really, really close. And when we grew up together, my dad was an ornery cuss. He was a drinker and a scrapper, and he taught us how to fight. He taught us how to box. He took us to karate lessons and the whole thing. And he would tell, when my brother and I would get in, he would pull us apart. He said, "You guys are brothers. Knock that off." He goes, "What I tell you is, I'm going to teach you guys how to fight." He says, "When you come home from school, and if one of you come home with a black eye, the other one better have a black eye, or I'll give you one." He goes, "Your brother, you back your brother up, man. If he's in it, you're going to be right there in it with him." And we learned what it meant to have this loyalty between one another. Even though, have any of you seen the new movie Ford versus Ferrari? Have you seen it yet? Two people have seen. You got go to Get Out more. First movie I've seen all this year in the theater, I think. And Dale Bravick told me to go see it. It was a great movie. Sandy and I took Hannah, and we went and saw the movie. And there's a scene in this movie where the two stars, Ford, Shelby Carroll and Ken Miles, the race car driver, they're best friends. And they get out in the middle of the street, and they start having a fist fight right there in the middle of the street, punching and scrapping and beating the snot out of each other, and they are going at it. And I'm watching this. I'm having PTSD because I'm watching myself. I used to do that stuff. And these guys are scrapping, and I'm like, man. And finally, after this long old fight scene, they finally roll over on the grass. Okay, have you had enough? Yeah. Okay, let's have a Coke. Brotherly love. They were ticked at each other. You ever been so ticked at somebody you wanted to punch them in the face? Now, don't punch them in the face. Have you ever been so ticked at somebody you punch them? You can be so ticked at somebody, but when you have brotherly love, you have a loyalty there. I don't care how mad I am at you, I am committed to you. I don't know how ticked off you make me. Man, there is a commitment here that goes deeper than anything else that happens. A loyalty. 1 Corinthians 13 says it like this: if you love someone, you will be loyal to him no matter what the cost. You'll always believe in him, always expect the best of him. And I love this last line: and always stand your ground defending him. You watch in your family, the fuse gets lit on one of your kids. The fuse gets lit on your spouse, and you're watching your mom light the fuse of your spouse there, and you jump in and you stand beside them. And all of a sudden they go, Whoa, this person is standing up for me instead of their mom. Wow, that's loyalty. Boy, that's commitment. How many times do you get caught in that place and you watch the fuse get lit and now the fuse is lit in you and you're like, what do I do? Do I die, mom or my job? It's a terrible place to be. And you cut the wrong wire. Loyalty says, no, I'm defending you no matter what the cost. Does your spouse know that you are fully loyal to them? You know they have those fears and doubts. That you're committed to them no matter what? Is there an out clause in your relationship? If there is, it's much easier. Blow the fuse. Romans 15 says, therefore, accept each other in the same way that Christ accepted you. He did this to bring glory to God. When you were at your worst, Christ was committed to you. He was loyal to you. He was there for you. No matter what you've done, he's in. Jesus didn't have a half-hearted commitment. You know when I need love the most? When I need loyalty the most? When I've been the most unlovely. I don't need it when I'm doing great. I need it when I feel like I'm this big. I'm out of a job. I've just blown it as bad as a guy can blow it. I've had my pastoral ordination removed from me. They call it being defrocked. I've been defrocked. My ordination has been removed. I don't have a job. I sent out 22 resumes. Every one of them came back loser. It didn't say loser on it, but that's how you read it, right? Loser. Loser. Finally get a job with a construction company building houses, and I was making $8 an hour setting forms in weather like this, up to my ankles in mud and carrying these 2x12s and $8 an hour. I got home from work and I don't know if you've ever done this where you kind of get serious with God. And I know posture, God doesn't care about our posture, but I'm on my face before God. Just my hand and just down in the carpet, and I'm there. Nobody else is in the house, and I'm crying out to God, God, I need a job. I've blown it so bad, I can't expect Sandy to, I got to pay the bills. I need a job. I remember saying to God, God, I'll do anything. I just don't want to sell cars. It's usually what pastors do when they leave the ministry, they sell cars. I don't want to sell cars. I prayed there for a while, and I pushed my hands up, and I'm in the push-up position. My hands are extended like this, and the phone rings. And I didn't reach in my pocket and answer the phone because the phones back then were attached to a wall with a cord. And so I went around into the kitchen. I grabbed the phone, and it was the owner of the local Dodge dealership. His name is Dick Withnell. He said, hey, Charlie, I heard you're down and out. I want to give you a job. Yeah. It's God. It's God. When I needed him the most. I made more money that year than I'd ever made in my life. It was just God. How loyal are you? How would you rate yourself in loyalty? Are you there when the person is down, when they're the ugliest, when they're at their worst, when they're absolutely being a total puke and they got more matches in their hand, light and fuses all over the place? And do you say, man, I'm committed to you. I'm in because Jesus was in for me when I was at my worst. I'm in for you. How would you rate yourself in brotherly love? Completely committed, as long as the person doesn't tick you off. Number three. Oh, be honest. Remember, be honest. This is the humble day. Okay. Number three. Compassion. Compassion. Finally, all of you live in harmony with one another. Be sympathetic. Love as brothers. Be compassionate. Be compassionate. Last week, we looked at this verse in Colossians. It says, clothe yourself with compassion. When people look at you, what do they see? They see a person who's compassionate. You know, my kids would not consider their dad compassionate. They come in and they have a splinter in their finger, and you can ask every one of them what I'd tell them. I said, get a knife. We'll just cut it off. You won't feel it anymore. Oh, dad, my leg. Go get the saw. Hey, we'll cut it off. It won't hurt anymore, right? My compassion was, they wouldn't consider me compassionate. I didn't clothe myself with compassion. And it cost me, because when they were hurting inside, they get dumped by their girlfriend when they failed the test, they wouldn't come to dad and say, hey, dad, I got this splinter. I got this pain. No, I know what dad's going to do. He's going to light the fuse. He's going to make fun. He's going to poke at it. He's going to belittle it, make it less than. And you know, I can make excuses for it, but that's the way I was raised, right? I didn't grow up in a compassionate home, and so it breeds itself. You got to thank God that you marry well, because my wife is a nurse, and guess what they are? They ooze compassion. The kids always run into her. Dad's got a knife. I'm going to mom. And you carry it into your workplace. And your employees don't come to you when they're hurting, because you're not clothed with compassion. They look at you and they say, something less. And instead of cutting the wire, it's like pouring gas on the fuse. What is compassion? What is compassion? One way to look at compassion is love in action. Love in action. It's more than the feeling. Because I could tell my kids, oh no, I feel for you, man. I feel the bad for you. I can look at the pictures on the screen of the missionaries that we have, and the people, the women in Latvia that were pulling off the street, and in Cambodia and Swaziland and so many places that we're doing, and we can go, oh man, my heart goes out to them. That's not compassion. Compassion is when you get online at what time, Tony, do we have to get online to get that $7 million? I'm going to get up at, is it East Coast? Is it like, so at 3 a.m.? I want to be the first in line for the $7 million. And you get online and you say, hey, I'm going to give to Giving Tuesday so that we can double our money, because that's compassion. And I'm going to write a big check for that thing, because that's compassion. Compassion is not, oh, I feel bad for those people. Compassion is love in action. Your kid comes in and you know it's a simple little sliver, and they're surely going to live, but you take them in your arms and say, oh, I'm sorry, this is hurting. Let's get the tweezers and let's get a bandage and let's work on this thing. They say, Daddy cares. Daddy's compassionate. Compassion says, I understand how you, sympathy says this, I understand how you feel. Compassion says, let me help you. Compassion says, let me help you. Sympathy, I understand how you feel. Compassion, let me. Compassion is giving what they need, not what they deserve. You need to write that down. Compassion is giving what they need, not what they deserve. Dick Withnell showed me compassion. He was a brother when I was at my worst, and he gave me what I needed. I had a lot of people say they were sorry for me. I had a ton of people tell me they were praying for me, and I'll take all the prayer I can get. Thank you. God bless you. But I didn't have very many people who were saying, hey, here's a job. Here's a job. Dan, thank you for coming up. We're gonna finish. Compassion is being generous with praise.
You're muted.
Generosity says, praise, compassion says, how can I make your life easier? How can I make your life easier, Sandy? I know you're fixing all this dinner for everybody. You're having everybody over 20 people coming over to the house. How can we make this better for you? Compassion is getting involved in that. Let me tell you how compassion is shown. It's shown in two ways. By what we say to others, what comes out of our mouth. Ephesians 4 says, don't use foul or abusive language. Boy, that period, we could just stop right there. But let everything you say be good and helpful so that your words will be an encouragement to those who hear them. What if you heap praise on these relatives you don't like? When you feel that fuse, when they light that fuse, instead of opening your mouth with something cutting coming back, an insult for an insult, you come back with praise. What if you took some time and you said, I'm going to write down three things about all the people coming over this holiday at this party I'm going to. I'm going to write down three things that I'm going to tell them throughout the night that's going to lift them up, that's going to be helpful to them, that's going to build them up. Sandy came and says, Charlie, you hardly even like any of my relatives. I said, Sandy, that's not true. I love your mother-in-law way more than I love my mother-in-law. One day a teacher has asked her students to list the names of the other students in the room. Put it on two sheets of paper, leaving space between them. Then she told them to think of the nicest thing they could say about each of their classmates and write it down. It took the remainder of the class period to finish their assignments, and as the students left the room, each one handed in the papers. That Saturday, the teacher wrote down the name of each student on a separate sheet of paper and listed what everyone else had to say about that individual. On Monday, she gave each student his or her list. Before long, the entire class was smiling. Really? She heard them whisper, I never knew that. I never knew I meant anything to anyone. I didn't know how others liked me so much. These were most of the comments. No one ever mentioned those papers in class again. She never knew if they discussed them after class or with their parents, but it didn't matter. The exercise was accomplished. The students were happy with themselves and with one another, and the group of students moved on. A few years later, one of the students was killed in Vietnam, and his teacher attended the funeral of that special student. The church was packed with his friends, and one by one, those who loved him looked and took their last walk by the coffin. The teacher was the last to do so. As she stood there, one of the soldiers who acted as a pallbearer came up to her. Were you Mark's math teacher? He asked. She nodded yes. Then he said, Mark talked about you a lot. After the funeral, most of Mark's former classmates went together to a luncheon, and Mark's mother and father were there, obviously waiting to speak to their teacher. We want to show you something, his father said, taking a wallet out of his pocket. They found this unmarked when he was killed. We thought you might recognize it. Opening the billfold, he carefully removed two worn pieces of notebook paper that had been obviously taped, folded, refolded many times. The teacher knew without looking that the papers were the ones which she had listed all the good things each of Mark's classmates had said about him. Thank you for so much for doing that, Mark's mother said. As you can see, Mark treasured his list. Many of Mark's former classmates started to gather around. One of them smiled rather sheepishly and said, I still have my list. It's in the top drawer of my desk at home. His wife said, he asked me to put it in our wedding album. I have mine too, Marilyn said, and it's in my diary. Then Vicky, another classmate, reached into her pocket and took out her wallet and showed her worn, frazzled list to the group. I carry this with me at all times. And without batting an eyelash, she continued, I think we all saved our list. That's when the teacher finally sat down and cried. She cried for Mark and for his friends. Those who would never see him again. I wonder how many times your words could change the trajectory of somebody's life. If instead of the unwholesome words, we use wholesome words that encourage and build up by what comes out of our mouth. The second way we show compassion is by how we act. I'm going to ask you to do something nice for your relatives this holiday. Kindness makes a person attractive. If you want to win the world, melt it. Don't use a hammer. What is there one thing that you can do for a family member to let them know you care?